Good morning, good evening. Welcome once more to the All About Windows Phone Insight Podcast. I'm Ewan Spence in the chair again for another 30 minutes or so of discussion, debate, and delightful little conversational pieces about the world of Windows Phone. Joining me, as always, something else that begins with D, David Gilson.
Hello, it's good to be here, and it's good. Hello to everyone listening at home.
Yeah, and if you're listening at work or you're listening on the bus or wherever you're listening to this podcast, it's great to have you along also joining us as well. And it's home and work and everything else all rolled into one. We have Rafe Lanford. Hello, Rafe.
Hello, everybody. Great to be here.
I love the fact that I'm kind of like looking round to the left at home thinking, yeah, I'm going to see you there and David's on the right. I don't know why I think of it that way. But there we go. Strangely enough, it's been a busy week, but not a huge amount of new stuff coming up this week, right? It's just sort of been everything going, well, where's everything lying now? How does the landscape look? And we're still trying to work out because the smartphone world's had quite a tumultuous September so far, hasn't it?
It has. Well, I think it's been a pretty busy week for news announcements in the mobile world, I think obviously dominated by the iPhone. But also people are still kind of reacting to the Nokia Lumia announcements. We're expecting to hear something from HTC before too long. I suspect that's maybe only a week or so away. Of course, we had Samsung announce the first Windows Phone 8 device, although very little in the way of information, couldn't switch it on. So we can only really talk about the design elements there. But yes, you're right. It's just been a little bit quieter, but there's been a lot of, you know, Windows Phone 8 is on the way. So lots of kind of preparatory bits and pieces for that. And people, you know, I guess taking stock of the announcement of the new Lumia devices, which I guess has been the big news, at least in the Windows Phone world.
I suppose the other thing to point out, and David, you might have spotted this one as well, is the amount of changes that are happening to bring everything into line, because Windows 8 also comes out at, we're expecting roughly the sort of same time as Windows Phone 8. And there's lots of elements that are lining up to try and make everything appear to be this one cohesive vision. David, you've been spotting that as well, haven't you?
Yeah, that's proliferating through a lot of things, actually. Even today, Skype released a desktop beta, which, while it's not a formerly known as Metro style application, it has got the flatter desktop style as we're seeing in the Windows Explorer in Windows 8. And there's rumors floating around that there will be a Windows Phone 8 companion application for Windows 8 as well. So yeah, I think it does feel as if there is a cohesive strategy in the background. I think probably somewhere in Microsoft there is a document floating around saying, well, we'd like these things to happen at the same time. Whether or not that does happen is probably half luck.
Yeah, there's probably this sort of staging document going, this many days away from launch, we do this, then we do this, then we do this, and then we do this. And probably one that happened this week, Rafe, was Windows Marketplace has went through a couple of things, but the most obvious one is it's had a name change, quite interestingly.
It has, yes. Instead of being known as the Windows Phone Marketplace, it's going to be known as the Windows Phone Store, and that actually brings it in line with Windows 8, which, for those that don't know, has an app store built into it, which is called, surprising enough, the Windows 8 Store. You know, obviously, it makes sense to align those. You're going to have similar experience. I suspect there may be similar back ends, of which more in a moment. So this was kind of part of the, you know, the branding being brought in line, and all this sort of thing makes sense to happen before you actually launch Windows Phone 8 rather than at the same time. You know, and it's small things like, you know, logos starting to get the new style. You know, the Microsoft logo has changed recently, so that's now got the new logo on what was the kind of Windows Phone Marketplace website on windowsphone.com, and it's now going to be referred to, of course, as the Windows Phone Store. That's rolling out as we speak. The first couple of countries, New Zealand, Australia, the UK, a couple of other European markets have got that. It'll be rolling out to the other 60 or so countries in due course. And as we talked about in an earlier podcast, the Windows Phone Store, will be available in a lot more countries by the time Windows Phone 8 rolls around, to up to about 135. I think it's going to be an almost doubling of the number of markets from which you can download applications. And there's also stuff going in on the background for developers, you know, the back-end developer system, which we talked about a few weeks ago, that's changed, and that's also, you know, supporting more countries as well. Plus, of course, there's some actual changes to the windowsphone.com website that have gone live, which I guess we should talk about those, because they directly impact on the consumer.
So where do you want to start then? Do you want to start with the sort of blog section that they're doing for curation, the lists, or the fact that there's better tools for reporting applications?
Well, I guess start with the blog section. In some ways, it's the least interesting, but they are bringing in the content from the outside as well as their own content. And I think it's just a way of making it a bit easier to kind of read and get, as you say, curated or human edited content to kind of get recommendations about what apps are interesting, what the reviews are. And that's also reflected in the lists as well. These lists that, you know, you've had on Windows Phone for a while now, and you get them obviously within the marketplace application on the existing phones. You know, it's looking at what's new, and you know, you get a certain amount of top paid and top free apps, but actually it's now there's a couple more that just makes it easier to find content in the marketplace, or in the store I should say now, I guess. And that's important because now you've got over 100,000 applications, and discovery does start to become much more of an issue. I mean, we've talked about that before, it always has been, but for example, you know, the what's new list has changed to what's new and rising, so it won't just be what's new in strict chronological order. There'll also be an element of how much something is being downloaded. What's good about that is the popular apps, you know, i.e. the best ones, will tend to float towards the top of that list because they're being downloaded lots, rather than just, you know, getting pushed out the way by 10 or 20 applications which are either spam apps or of niche interest. So it kind of makes that list more useful. And by the same token, you're seeing similar for, you know, best paid and best free apps, all aimed at sort of making it easier to find the best applications. But there are some other changes I know that you noted, Ewan.
Yeah, I think the one that's actually interesting me is the fact that there's now going to be better tools for reporting problem applications. I think, you know, certainly when I go into the marketplace, you can go on and you can see that, you know, there's an application that's listed, say, for example, in education, but in actual fact, it's a slidey puzzle game of Christina Hendricks with a well-placed bit of cleavage. And it's there just so it can be at the top of the list, just completely gaming it for SEO. But it's the sort of thing that it's very hard for a computer program to actually identify. It's then going to be much easier for people to actually report back to Microsoft, I think there's an issue with this application. So what that's for me, that's great because that's going to have the curation of the App Store helped. But the big curation thing that's going to be interesting is that search box at the top is now going to be using some of the technology from Bing. In fact, it's using the Bing search engine, but not necessarily the front end, which will allow for better searching. So things like slight typos, for if you search for a goffle game, the chances are you will now find golf, whereas at the moment you'd just be taken to a round of goffle. And also that will remember people's results and clicks on what they search for, which will improve the search results. So we're creating this lovely little feedback loop of we're giving you better results, and the results that you get will give us a better result to give you a better result next time, on and on again. And again, it's okay, part of it is also that we'd like everybody to remember that we have this search engine called Bing and it's not Google. And it's faster than Google because Bing is only one syllable and Google is two. So ergo, Bing is faster. Thank you very much, Lauren Feldman, for that one. But it just, again, it's starting to tie in more and more blocks of the Microsoft infrastructure that, you know, a year or two ago were sort of isolated islands. Now they're all coming together. They're all working to help each other. And I find that really, really promising.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's worth mentioning also is it's going to be a bit more child-friendly. I mean, it's the so-called porn apps, which it's more the ones that may have an adult rating for some of the content within them are going to be a better hidden, so that if, you know, your children or younger people are using the marketplace, they won't come across stuff that they shouldn't do. And there's going to be various ways to reveal that. And I think, honestly, that's probably a good thing. It's not going to get rid of the content altogether or hide it. It's there if you want it. You know, those kind of tweaks, along with what you're talking about, search, just reflect kind of the fact that Microsoft has, you know, had a couple of years of doing this, a bit of maturity coming in. And I think the search one is particularly important because, I mean, if you look at some of the reports from, you know, consumer research about how people find applications, very often they're using a search term often to search for a specific app, but they tend to do that more than just browsing through lists. And where lists are important does tend to be in kind of the top grossing or top 50 type app lists, whereas search is going to be the primary tool. And so I think it's just a reminder to developers to make sure you get your keywords and your description right within them, you know, when you're submitting your application, because those are going to be all important, you know, far more important in some ways than website search engine optimization, because, you know, search really is the primary means of discovering an application. It's also worth pointing out that because WindowsPhone.com, the actual structure of it, is changing, there are going to be some knock-on effects on applications which actually scrape that website. I think one of the best known of these is Reinstaller, and I know, David, you've been looking at this.
Yes, Reinstaller, and actually is another application, well, web application is closer to our hearts. Yes, Reinstaller has been affected by this because Reinstaller works by, well, it worked, I should say, by ripping the HTML of the Windows Phone site. And now the whole structure and layout has changed, so it can't access the data in the same way that it did for the applications that you have linked to your account. So that will not work anymore. And if anyone was not familiar with Reinstaller, WindowsPhone.com provides a list of every application you've ever installed on your phone, and Reinstaller will access that and provide you with a nice handy list, so you can go one by one into the deep link into the marketplace and reinstall all your apps on a new device. But until the author can possibly work around the change in the HTML structure of the new site, that will not work. And also, Riff, might this affect our own application directory on allaboutwindowsphone.com?
It won't affect it immediately, but it's probably worth saying that with all these changes going on, I would expect to see some changes to the kind of the back end, the undocumented APIs, which I think a lot of sites use for, you know, getting app information, and that may well change with Windows Phone 8. We'll have to wait and see for the exact details on that. In terms of, you know, reinstalling the applications like that, I think it's a shame to see those go away, but it wouldn't be at all surprising to see Microsoft provide some kind of similar functionality either in Windows Phone 8 itself or something on the website. As you said, they've listed the apps before. It wouldn't be difficult to have some kind of reinstall button put in place there. We know that, you know, you can do push install on Windows Phone, so I'm hoping that we'll see a bit more development around that area. Inevitably, you know, when Windows Phone 8 launches, we'll probably get a whole bunch of new functionality or refreshed things on the actual WindowsPhone.com website, which, you know, actually is an area that I think is often underestimated, because there's a lot of useful bits and pieces in there, you know, the obvious Find My Phone type tools, but you can get, you know, quite a bit of information there, and obviously access to SkyDrive. It's all part of the cloud push, so I think watch this space. But yeah, it's kind of a shame to see Reinstaller break, because it's a tool I've used myself when moving from one phone to another, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have too.
Yeah, and I just wanted to provide a quick sanity check on the Bing integration, because I've just been playing around with the new marketplace and trying to deliberately mistype several application names. Not working at all yet, so I don't think they've connected the Bing functionality in yet, or at least I hope they haven't. Also, I think it'd be nice if you could actually search for terms in the application description as well, rather than just titles and genres. But yeah, it's not working yet.
It will get there, of that I am sure. Right then, okay, let's move on. Obviously, the other thing that's going on is bits and pieces. Windows 7.8, obviously, we still have to see a lot of details. Rafe, there was something kind of bouncing around to people going, oh, suggestions for Windows 7.8, but it looked to be more like a user wish list. I think the only confirmed thing we've had is Nokia have talked about making sure that some of their new features will be on the older Lumia handsets, and that's all that's happened this week in this spec, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, a lot of people were talking about Windows Phone 7.8 last week because of the new announcements. They're seeing all these new bits of software coming. They're going, are we going to get those on the existing devices? But there haven't really been any changes there. You're probably alluding to a post on the user voice forums that Microsoft runs, where they were asking for some sort of feedback, and I think it may have been misunderstood and got turned into a feature request list for Windows Phone 7.8. I mean, I think anyone would realize that at this point, that feature list has been locked down. There aren't any changes, and probably the final bits of code are being put in place. Just to, you know, reiterate this, Windows Phone 7.8, which is the upgrade for the existing devices. In terms of the new stuff, it's going to be the new style start screen, which gives you, you know, variable size tiles and allows you to do a bit more customization. There may be some support for extra animations or extra things you can do with those tiles. That's not entirely clear. But other than that, new functionality will be pretty minimal, and you're going to be relying on the OEMs, the device manufacturers, to provide it. We haven't really heard much from HTC or Samsung about that, but Nokia have, you know, talked about that quite a bit, and already some of those things have become available. Camera extras is kind of an example of that. Counters, which you know, tracks your usage in terms of minutes, SMS sent, and data. But Nokia also shared this week that there's some more coming. There's a ringtone editor, for example. They kind of confirmed contact share. I mean, that's actually been available for a while now. It's basically a way of sending and receiving V cards on Windows Phone, which if you do that at all is absolutely great. And I think one that will catch people's attention is the kind of the Bluetooth sending and receiving, which will allow you to send certain files over Bluetooth to another phone. And that's been one of the big missing elements that I know a lot of people have complained about. They've also said that CinemaGraph, which is something they showed off at the Lumia launch, is kind of these camera lenses, would be made available for the older devices. And effectively what this does, it takes a series of photographs and then it can be used to kind of turn it into an animated GIF. So for example, you can have someone waving and then you say, I want a certain bit of this picture animated, and it will use the multiple photographs to turn that into an animation. So you can have an animation of someone waving. Now, there are various other lenses coming from Nokia, which will be similar add-ons to, like with camera extras, you know, for doing different filters and maybe removing people from a photograph. And that's actually going to be based on motion. So there's actually quite a bit that will get delivered to these older devices. Obviously, there's going to be a lot that isn't, but you know, this was always going to be a contentious issue, continues to be so. But I think it's good that Nokia, as a device manufacturer, are making an effort to, you know, backport what they can where they can. And I suspect, you know, what exactly is provided will depend on, you know, what they're able to do, because obviously some of this stuff is going to require features that is in Windows Phone 8 and isn't in 7.5 or 7.8. The stuff that's standalone apps, probably easier to backport, and so that's what we're seeing. That certainly seems to be confirmed from the post that we saw about this on Nokia Conversations this week, and you can read more about the various bits and pieces on allaboutwindowsphone.com as well.
Indeed. Now let's move right up to date. The 9220, that sounded like it's an old communicator. The Lumia 920 and the Lumia 820, still, of course, featuring heavily not just in news from ourselves, but from news around the web, the Windows Phone websites, the gadget websites in general, the analysts and everything. It's just still, people are still looking at this handset and going, you know, well, Rafe, are they going, wow? Are they going, wow? Are they going, huh? Or I don't understand. Or, hey, we've got new LTE now. Lucky, it would be perfect for that.
I think it rather depends on your perspective. Certainly it's been a part of the conversation, and I've seen a lot of people, you know, comparing it to the iPhone. I guess we'll get onto that a bit later. But there's been a certain amount of, you know, continuous just, yes, this is a nice handset. So I'd say it's an intermediate wow. And that's, you know, because of the colours, because of the various bits of innovation, be it the wireless charging or the screen or the camera. It certainly caused people to sit up and take notice. And a couple of the announcements you're referring to there from operators. So, for example, we've had Everything Everywhere in the UK. That's kind of the new version of T-Mobile, and Orange have announced a 4G network. That's a first for the UK. And that the Lumia 920 is going to be exclusive to that network. We're not sure for how long. They'll also be carrying the 820, but that won't be exclusive. I suspect the final deals on this exclusivity are still being worked out, and it will depend on how many devices that Everything Everywhere promises to sell. You know, going back a little while, Stephen Elop actually said in one of the earnings calls that they would be looking to change the way they launch handsets, particularly in Europe, rather than to go widespread. They'd be looking to do specific deals with operators around exclusivity in order to kind of drive volume, like they did with Lumia 900 with AT&T in the US. I suspect the exclusivity period won't be all that long, and it may just be restricted to an LTE version. There are other 4G networks in the UK launching next year, and it may not even be as long as that. Sometimes these exclusivity periods can just be a month or so, but we'll have to wait and see on that. There's various other operators also making announcements. Vivendi in France, for example, Telecom Italia, Vodafone in Germany, Three in Denmark, I think T-Mobile in Germany as well, Swisscom, and a representative from Nokia in China said that there'll be a TD-SDMA version, that's kind of Chinese 3G version, which will be available on China Mobile. So there's a lot of these kind of momentum announcements from operators, which, you know, in the light of the fact that Nokia didn't talk about pricing or availability, I suppose does indicate that there's a wide range of interest out there. So there seems to be getting pretty broad support. But until all of this comes out and we hear more about the formal launch details, I guess a lot of it is sort of open to speculation. The general pattern, though, is that it's going to launch in key markets in November. That probably means places like Russia, Germany, Italy, the UK, maybe France as well, and then the US. And I think China and India might get added into that mix, although that may be pushed into December. And then kind of the secondary markets, and this is places like maybe Belgium, Denmark, you know, the smaller European countries, sort of Eastern Europe and the Middle East maybe, and some other Asian countries, will wait until later in 2012 and probably into 2013. And there'll be various variants floating around the place. For the US, it looks like it's going to be AT&T getting the exclusivity on the 920 with T-Mobile carrying the 820. But there is just some reports coming in that Verizon have said they're going to be carrying multiple Windows Phone devices in the fourth quarter without any specific details. We know that they've been talking to and working with Nokia, so I wouldn't be at all surprised if one of those is a Nokia device, along with maybe something for a Samsung or HTC. I think the smart money there would be on some kind of Verizon variant of the 820, maybe the 822. But we'll have to wait and see for the official details on that one. AT&T, as I say, will be kind of the launch operator. And the date being talked about is November the 2nd. But I think all of this is subject to change because the final details are being worked out. And it's pretty clear that there's a lot of work being done on just finalizing the software and doing all the testing. And I suspect it will come down to the testing in the end. They have to squeeze down maybe 4 weeks of testing into 3 weeks. And if it doesn't quite make it, it could be mid-November.
And of course, well, it could be, right, is when they said, when Verizon said they're taking multiple handsets, it means that they're going to take three and just sell those three and see if the people like them and then maybe order another five or six. hopefully they're making the entire handset range. I want to bring this point up here because we briefly glossed over there the whole pricing and launch and scheduling dates. One of the things that Nokia, rightly or wrongly, let's leave that open as a discussion point for the moment, didn't do was announce dates and announce pricing. And of course, everybody goes, oh, but Apple managed to do it. But the interesting thing about Apple is Apple basically showed the US price, which was going to be the on-carrier price, i.e. $200, $300, or $400, and then said, and all these other countries, flash them up really quickly, put them down again, hope nobody is taking a picture of them for the live streams. And again, you know, Apple didn't really announce that much. I mean, the launch price in the UK is £529 for the iPhone 5, or as I call it, the iPhone Blue Steel. Nokia were caught in a hard place here, with a hard place on one side and an even harder place on the other side, because they don't have the deals in place and they can't announce that it would take them half an hour to retail off all the options.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's the first time for a very long time that I can recall Nokia not announcing so-called price before taxes and subsidies, which they generally do in euros. So I was a bit surprised not to see that. And availability information, I wasn't really terribly surprised that didn't get announced. But I was maybe expecting a few operator partnerships to be announced, but I suspect it's the case they haven't quite been finalised. And also, you have to remember now that Nokia is working with Microsoft, and so there seems to be a suggestion that Microsoft wasn't quite ready to talk about Windows Phone 8 in perhaps as much detail as they were originally planning to do. And so that held back a bit of information. In some ways, I think that was the bigger problem. It felt like we were only getting half a story some of the time. You know, you can look at it the other way around and say there's going to be a second bite of the cherry and more excitement generated. And I think perhaps in reflection of the iPhone 5 announcement, which I think a lot of people found underwhelming, especially as a lot of the iOS 6 stuff had already been announced, maybe it's not a bad idea, especially as the iPhone will go on sale and then we'll get more information about Windows Phone. And I think we can be pretty sure there's been quite a bit that's been held back in software terms. And at the end of the day, you know, availability and pricing information, I think the media get quite wound up about it. But honestly, I could have told you, you know, 30 seconds after the press conference, a price range within about, I don't know, let's say 25 to 50 euros, because it will be very similarly priced to the 800 and the 900, the 820 and 920 respectively. And it was always going to be available, you know, October, November time. That hasn't really changed. We just haven't had them tell us officially. And you're right about, you know, in terms of the iPhone, you get the US pricing and then availability and pricing elsewhere. Actually, that comes out more slowly. And just as Nokia is planning to do, the iPhone will launch in key markets first. You know, and the same thing will happen with the Lumia 920. As I suggested, it's going to be the key European, US, China and India markets. And those are the ones that matter. And at the end of the day, people will buy the phones that are available when they walk into the shop. And for most people, they're not going to be looking at exactly when something becomes available. And you know, as long as it's all within a kind of 2 or 3 month period, I don't think it makes all that much of a difference.
Just to differ a little bit with you, Riff, I think that there is a matter of perception that I think did do Nokia some harm, because yes, it is the bloggers and journalists who get hung up on this sort of thing. Most of the normobs, as we fondly call them out there, probably won't even really be aware of the announcement that went on in New York. But it's for people who are aware of it, other people who are influencing and recommending to other people what to buy. And if nothing else, I think it just peeved people that, professionals, that we didn't know when it was coming. And it was, on one hand, that felt like a poor show, because even if it was going to be a long way off, at least tell us when to aim for. However, on the other hand, there was the timing of this with the iPhone, and there was a benefit to it, because they got all of the fantastic innovative technology that's gone into the Lumia 920 and 820, and people had that in the back of their mind and will have even subconsciously or consciously have been weighing the iPhone 5 against that. And the iPhone 5 was much, much more of an iterative product, whereas the Lumia 920 has got all sorts of fantastic gubbins shoved into it. So I think there will have been a positive effect as well in terms of perception too.
But I think there's also the fact that if you go back and have a look at other phone announcements, if you go back and look at the Galaxy S3 announcement, if you look back historically at any handset manufacturer apart from Apple, there is always a reluctance to go beyond Q1, Q4, end of the year, in terms of all this, because they are dealing, you know, with their primary customers are the networks. The primary customers are not the end users. Apple are in this lovely position where they have the Apple stores. They can go direct to the customer if they can do. And again, it's one of those ways where the goalposts change, and everybody says, well, why aren't you following Apple's rules? And it's just like, oh, we're taking our ball away. but it doesn't go from that one. I mean, do you not think, though, that, David, that this point of oh, there wasn't a launch date, there wasn't a price announced, where's and I'll be a little bit contrary here, but tech bloggers looking for something to kick Nokia with, and all they could latch onto, because of all the gubbins and it's shiny yellow just like Bumblebee and Transformers, all they could latch onto was the lack of a date.
I'll agree with you there that people do look for something, for anything, because at the end of the day, those people are getting paid to write, and we have to write about something. But at the same time, you want to, you've got all the technology laid out in the phone. You think, yep, this is great, or I like, or I don't like the look of it. But part of what you want to assess it on, and this is people really wanting to like review it as soon as they can, is like, we want to review it and assess this. They can't assess it completely because they can't weigh it against the price. And also what you were saying about that they are dependent on the networks as well. Well, there's a simpler way around that. You just say, we will be releasing to networks at this point, and then and then the perception will be by people that, well, if I'm still having to wait to get that phone, well, it's the network's fault. It's not Nokia's fault.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting discussion, because it kind of plays into all of these launch events and the role that the media plays. And I think perception is all important. It certainly does feel sometimes like, you know, you say a certain number of positive things and then you need to get in a criticism. And the pricing, the availability was the obvious one this time around. I mean, if it had been me, I would have wanted to provide that information, at least in some form. And I think David provides a possible way of doing it. And, you know, you don't need to provide much. You just say it's going to be available by November, and this is the unsubsidized price. I think people would be happy with that. Of course, they're going to look for operator deals, but I think most people understand they can't always be announced straight away. But it's sort of interesting that we're even having this conversation, because no one's really sort of saying, is the hardware good enough? Everyone's going, yep, great hardware. It's good enough. It stands out. In fact, I think a lot of people are kind of considering it, you know, the best smartphone hardware out there. And a lot of that's about the way Nokia communicated the innovation it's put into the products. And I think it's quite interesting because it's not the first time Nokia have had innovative things in their products, but it has been put across as a strong message, you know, about the Pure Motion, the Pure View camera, about the various bits of screen technology, and also about the kind of the design as well. And I would compare it to the way that Clear Black Display was announced. I think it was on the Nokia E7 a couple of years ago at Nokia World. You know, that was actually a genuine difference that made the screen a lot more readable in bright sunlight, yet there were very few details on it, and it didn't really get pushed all that much. And speaking to some of the Nokia spokespeople at the event, including Kevin Shields, you know, he said, yes, we're actually going to push some of this innovation into our consumer messaging. So, you know, Pure View, Pure Motion, HD Plus, and all of that is going to get specifically talked about in the marketing and in the retail channels. So, yeah, it's interesting that this debate is happening, but I do think it's really positive for Nokia that it is happening in such a widespread fashion, including the US media. And that's a big, big contrast to a bit to a year ago. You know, that was a big deal because it was the first Nokia Windows Phone devices, but particularly to 2 years ago when Nokia announced the Symbian 3 devices, which were arguably some of the most advanced on the market in terms of technology and what they could do, yet didn't really get some of the attention they deserve from the US media. But now Nokia is part of that conversation again, and it's really interesting to see that often when talking about the iPhone 5, in the kind of the comparison sentence that you always get at these launch events, you know, people are talking about the Lumia 920 and saying, oh, but the Lumia 920's got, you know, a higher pixel density in its screen. It's got a bigger physical screen. Oh, the 920 camera is probably going to be better. Oh, it's got this Pure Motion screen technology. And all of a sudden, it feels like the iPhone 5 has, you know, lost the perception of being the leading device in terms of, you know, technology and specifications. It doesn't mean it's not going to suddenly still sell millions. It is going to do very well, but it feels like that's because of the ecosystem and the incumbent advantage that it has. And so suddenly it doesn't have this clear device leadership, and it'll be really interesting to see where that leads. I think it'll take time to have an impact. But that is, for me, the biggest takeaway in some ways from this last week, that, you know, a Nokia device is being talked about as the best, the most innovative smartphone. And, you know, you can talk about whether that's true or not in purely technical and rational terms, but that's the perception that seems to be coming across, at least from some quarter. And of course, there's fans on each side screaming, no, this phone's better, that phone's better, Nokia's doing this great, Apple does this great. But it is certainly part of the conversation. And for me, that's a big contrast.
So, Rafe, this is probably the time to bring in the other big conversation point. Would you like me to be very, very nice or very, very nasty?
I think go ahead and be very nasty, because I'm pretty sure I know what this is going to be about. It's something to do with YouTube and video samples and things, perhaps.
Yep.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I put it to you and I put it to the listeners that if Nokia hadn't fired all, not fired, requested that they no longer work most of their PR staff, they wouldn't have cocked up that YouTube video.
Ooh, well, that's a tricky one. And we should explain the context of this one. And this is about a video that was shown off demonstrating optical image stabilization at this event. And actually, more to the point, it was put on the Nokia Conversations website. And, you know, someone on The Verge, I think it was, spotted that it wasn't actually shot on a Lumia 920.
I think it was Pocket Now, and The Verge picked it up.
Yeah, okay, roughly at the same time. And there was suddenly a big kerfuffle about the fact that Nokia was faking video samples, and it could snowball into also faking images. And the imaging thing, as far as we understand, hadn't been faked, but this video was done, as were some of the stills within it that were demonstrating optical image stabilization. Now, the interesting thing is I was sitting in this press conference and I actually saw, you know, the video broadcast for the first time. And to me, it was pretty obvious that it was a demo video and probably wasn't shot on the Lumia 920, because it was almost immediately followed by the video they subsequently uploaded, which was someone walking along a boardwalk. And that was actually, you know, obviously shot on a 920 and a competing device. So I was a bit surprised, to be honest, that this got picked up and made, you know, so much fuss got made about it, because it didn't even cross my mind, really, that it was from a 920 or not from a 920, I guess I should say.
Well, that's, you know, because you like to write nice things.
Well, perhaps, but, you know, I was sort of paying attention, and, you know, anyone who's been to one of these launches will know that Nokia and other companies frequently, you know, show videos to kind of demonstrate something about the phone, you know, either exploding so you can see all the component parts or example of how something works. I mean, I guess it should have been clearer stated, and actually the real problem came when it was put on the website and it wasn't obvious that it wasn't, you know, an explanation of the technology rather than a demo video. And you know, as I said, that's the way I read it in the press conference. Obviously other people didn't read it that way, so it then got picked up, and blindingly obvious, you don't want something like that to be unclear. And I think for people who just saw it on the website for the first time, it was confusing. I mean, to give them credit, Nokia did react very quickly and say, they added something saying, yes, this isn't actually from a 920. But the implication that had been in the first place, I guess the damage had already been done. And so, you know, that story spread almost more quickly than the launch of the device itself did. The irony in all of this is, for anyone who's actually tried out the 920, the demo was pretty legitimate. I mean, I saw, you know, it on the show floor, and I say there's a couple of demo videos on YouTube that you can go and look at, and it really does make a massive difference, and it really is quite groundbreaking. And you know, the low light stuff, but also this demo, which was demonstrating basically how you get rid of camera shake that you normally associate with kind of camera phone videos. You know, if you're holding it in your hand, inevitably it gets jerked about the place, and then you have this slightly spooky you know, technique where it almost feels like it's a steady cam shot. You know, you're just gliding along a view when you're moving, or even when you're just holding it in your hands, it feels much more stable. And certainly the video demos I saw, and this was actually stuff I saw shot on the camera in the demo hall, you know, exhibited those same properties. So, you know, people will be out there going, oh, you're saying they didn't need to fake it. Well, basically, yes, but I mean, not that I really think they faked it in the first place. But I think this is an important lesson. You know, clearly they made a mistake. And yes, you could argue that if they'd had a few more people check this over, maybe it wouldn't have happened. But it's the damage that can be done by a kind of unintended consequence, because I don't think this was malicious in any sense of the word. You know, Nokia as a company generally doesn't do that. And I don't think, you know, they were misled. And certainly the view I take on it was it was unintentional. And, it, you know, they were almost unlucky to get picked up on it, because I took the view, yes, it's perfectly obvious it's not. I mean, the thing that gave it away to me, to be honest, when watching the video, was there was kind of off and on. And obviously when you are having optical image stabilization across the whole camera unit, it's not going to be possible to turn it off and on like that. And so I just assumed it was a demonstration of the difference between the two, presumably shot in some kind of rig or something like that. But it's interesting. I know other people felt a lot more strongly about it, and kind of, you have to respect that. And you think, someone really should have picked up on that and realised that might happen.
It's almost like, you know, Nokia needs some sort of person who's got a sort of evil blogger spirit in every meeting going, how are you going to kick us? But Rafe, I will put this to you again, a second point. And David, I'll come to you right afterwards as well on the same point. Because of all the fury around this video, more people reading more tech columns and reading more general articles in the newspaper know that Nokia's new phone is so advanced they need an entire SLR and camera rig to replicate the smart technology Nokia have put inside the camera. Therefore, more people think that the Nokia is more impressive because they faked it. Discuss.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, no such thing as bad publicity. And a lot of the stuff I've read, you know, has been from people who were like me, were at the event, who basically were saying there was no need for them to fake it because it, you know, it was genuine. And my answer to that was, I don't think they were trying to fake it. You know, I think it's really unfortunate. I'm just talking about my perceptions I saw, because I saw this story break and was frankly a little bit surprised. But, you know, everyone can see the online backlash, you know, and it was big. You know, it was on the front page of the BBC News website, taking up a lot of column inches, as you say. But yes, you know, perhaps you could even argue that it wasn't a bad thing, but I think it's probably fair to say no company wants to see this happen. But yeah, there probably are more people out there who know that Nokia produced a really good camera, but a lot of people are just going to see the fake headline and not investigate any further, and that does do damage to a company, no doubt about it. And you know, the availability and the pricing information, don't think anyone cares about. This one could maybe have a longer term effect. And you know, there were three things that kind of happened at this launch event that might be considered bad, and I, you know, pricing is one of them, availability, then there was this hoo-ha around, you know, faked footage. And then the last one was kind of the lack of information about Windows Phone 8. I actually think the last of those, not talking more about Windows Phone 8 was probably more of an issue because you basically didn't get the complete story on what this device was about. The fact that the hardware was so good actually saved it in a sense, because there were the three big bits of innovation to talk about. And, you know, certainly amongst people I spoke to, you know, pretty positive reactions. I think the only downside were people were a bit concerned about the weight and the size of the device. And I can't say I noticed that, but then I'm not particularly bothered by the weight of my devices. The 920 is up around the 180 gram mark. You know, I think that varies by mileage, you know, what you think. But it's really interesting to kind of dissect these events afterwards. And I suspect a lot of this will have been forgotten about, you know, a couple of months down the line when people actually get the devices and can try it out for themselves. And honestly, based on what I saw, you know, from the demo and actually having a go with the camera myself and all the stuff you read about the technology afterwards and how it works, you know, the camera really is something quite special. And, you know, at the end of the day, the proof will be in the pudding.
Right. And to answer your question, Ewan, I think, yes, it may have done some damage. However, there's the old adage of no publicity is bad publicity. And take, for example, look at it from RIM's point of view. I think RIM wishes people were talking about it like that. Maybe that was a bit harsh.
Well, RIM's interesting, isn't it, David? Because if you think back to when they were first talking about BlackBerry 10, they came up with this really bit of impressive kind of camera demo that people were talking about, which was actually based on Scalado technology, so removing people from photos. And that was just, oh, and finally, this is one tiny bit of the lens technology in the Nokia launch. And that was one of the kind of the three big points talked about with BlackBerry 10. It's unfair to make that comparison, maybe, but you're absolutely right. You know, everyone is talking about Nokia, and you couldn't have a stronger contrast with RIM right now.
Exactly. And just to comment on what you've been commenting on, Riv, I think I had to check myself with this because I was like you. I was a little bit surprised that this was coming out as an issue at all as well. And I had to really look at myself and my biases and my preconceptions and really analyze why I thought that. And I think why I thought that was that, I mean, maybe you'll correct me on this because you've tried the 920 and I haven't. But I looked at the video and it was clear to me it was an instructional video. It was a demonstration video of what optical image stabilization meant. It wasn't meant to be, this is what you can do. This is the sort of video you'll get with your Lumia 920, because frankly, it looked far too good quality to be a camera phone video. So that's why it never even occurred to me that they were faking it, because of course it wasn't from a Lumia 920. However, Apple has been raked over the coals by at least the UK advertising authorities for presenting user experiences on TV adverts that do not really reflect real life, and they have to put a little caveat at the bottom, and there should be one rule for all. And because that was an instructional demonstration video, it was a form of reporting. And when you report, you quote your sources, and in their case, they should have quoted the source, the video source.
Yeah, I think you're right there, and that instructional video point is a good one. As that kind of reinforced what I was saying about a demo of it on and off. And as I say, you know, it wasn't as if there wasn't immediately then a kind of a demo. And this is actually footage we've shot on the phone itself. But you're right, you know, you can't have two standards. I mean, I did think it was a bit strange the way it kept being referred to as an advert when it hasn't run on TV. You know, it was something that was on a website. But I think you're spot on about, you know, they should have reported or should have had a source. This is where the video came from. And I guess that's sort of an oversight that's easy to make. And in one sense, forgivable, but you can't afford to do something like that when you're trying to, you know, launch a new phone and create as much positive publicity as possible. And so
I don't think it's forgivable, Rafe.
Well, I think mistakes happen. And, you know, for me, it's really about the intent. You know, was the intent to deceive? No, I don't think it was. You know, and actually the big issue I think around this was, you know, showing it in the press conference online, and actually thought that was pretty clear. And anyone who, you know, kind of misread that, you sort of go, well, you could have asked someone. The fact that it then appeared on conversations.nokia.com, kind of the official blog, without any kind of context around it and without that kind of second sample video, that was a bit of a problem for me. And I can see why people might have been misled by that. You know, and yes, they did the right thing. They apologized very quickly and very clearly. that the mistake shouldn't really have been made in the first place. And yes, yeah, you're right, in that sense, not forgivable. You know, yes, I think a lot of people will talk about this and say they did the wrong thing. But I thought we saw quite a bit of Nokia in the way they responded so quickly to this, and very clearly they didn't try and hum and haw around it. You know, you can't but help but make a comparison to the way that Apple has dealt with, you know, similar issues around, you know, the antenna back on the original iPhone 4. And, you know, it's unfair to make that comparison in one sense, but it does kind of reinforce people's impressions of, you know, Nokia is a company that will listen and respond to this kind of thing. You're not going to change the mind of any fanboys on either side, but it was quite an interesting one to watch. As I say, it was kind of, I was in two minds about it, because one part of me says, why is this even a story? The second part of me said, yep, fair enough. And then seeing the response to it, and then it, you know, continued to build momentum and has, you know, been much commented on the past. But actually, the important thing for me is still kind of the device itself and the technology in it, not sort of the bits around it.
I think Nokia are going to have a serious look at the parameters that they have for their advertisements and other promotional videos, and plus look very carefully at who they hire to do it. Because whereas, as I said, with this particular video, I wasn't immediately in my discomfort zone with it, because it just never occurred to me that it was meant to be. It was trying to mislead people. I thought it was clear it was from another video source. But it's not the first time that I've sort of questioned Nokia's advertising strategies, because there was another case about a year back. It was for the Nokia 700, which is a Symbian device, and it's supposed to be like really, really small and slim phone. And the advertising campaign for that, and I think Rafe may know what I'm talking about, because I think you weren't happy with this either. It was a bunch of very nice-looking young women who were wearing white T-shirts, and it looked as if they were wearing jeans, but they weren't. They were wearing white underwear with jeans painted on their legs, and the whole idea of the advert is that they could slip this phone into their underwear as if it was a jeans pocket, and it's so small you wouldn't notice the bulge. And I thought that was a terrible and really uncomfortable making advert. And it says a lot to me, actually, that Nokia have been ripped over the course for this case that's been rather questionable motives. I mean, there's the old saying of never assume malice when incompetence will do. But that campaign for Nokia 700 was out and out exploitation.
Yeah.
And there was no outcry about that at all.
Yeah, I do remember and can remember being slightly horrified at the time. I mean, all advertising's like that. I mean, the ones that people remember most are that, you know, either great cinematic, you know, cinematography or something really memorable, or the ones that tend to outrage or do something a bit different. And, you know, Gap is probably a primary example of something like that, or Benetton going back further. But yeah, it's interesting. I think just a feeling that Nokia is sailing a bit close to the edge than it might have done in the past, but I actually think it's a reflection of the fact the company isn't as conservative as it used to be. It's doing things at a faster rate. And so, you know, it's done various things that you go, a bit questionable. But I would say, I still think, relatively speaking, it behaves better than a lot of the companies out there. So, you know, this one's going to go round and round, I'm sure. But I think you're probably right. It wasn't done with malice. It just it was incompetence, if you like, or just no thought given to how it might be perceived. And, you know, it comes back to that issue of perception. That's all important. And I'm sure there'll be people who go away from there thinking Nokia's a less honest company than it used to be. But I suspect they'll probably be outweighed by the number of people that saw this and actually found about the Lumia 920 and found out that it got this super new camera technology. So in the end, I suspect it might be a win for Nokia, rather bizarrely.
But a very hard-fought win, and even then, it's going to be done in overtime as well, and just sailing one over at field goal range of 40 yards. Okay, obviously, there's more to go on. The Windows Phone story is accelerating as we go into October and the presumed launch of Windows Phone 8 at the end of the month, unless it's all gone horribly wrong and somebody's deleted the information off the mainframe and they have to start again from scratch because they didn't take a backup. But I'm sure they have. That's fine. It only remains, I think, to return to the traditional end of the podcast question, which is, what's in your pockets of applications this week? Rafe, do you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, I thought I'd talk about City Lens because this was really given a big show at the New York event. And I was kind of a bit curious why, because I've actually used it before. It's been available for a little while. And I've always been a bit sceptical about augmented reality. But I thought, oh, fair enough. I'll give it a go while I'm here because I've got it on my device. And it's one of the few things you could actually try out that was talked about at that event. And while I was in New York, I was actually navigating around to various places using Nokia Maps. And actually what I found Nokia City Lens really useful was with the last 50 yards of navigation. You know, you arrive onto a street or an intersection, you know, which you've been directed to using Nokia Maps, but you can't quite find that shop or that cafe or that restaurant that you're looking for. And actually what City Lens was very good for, you could flip it up and it changes from map mode into kind of this augmented reality view mode. And you could sort of pan around and you could use it to identify which was the correct shop or the place you're going. So I actually think this technology might have quite a bit of potential as, you know, kind of the last 50 meters of navigation. So it was interesting to see it's going to be integrated into Nokia Maps. It's kind of, you'll flip it up and it'll switch to augmented reality mode. So perhaps it's actually more useful than I've given it credit for in the past. And as I have said in the past, it is quite useful if you're in a strange city for just finding interesting stuff immediately around you. And that remains true. So I just thought it would be worth mentioning as a kind of the app pick for me this week, just encouraging people maybe to give it another go.
Lovely. David, what do you have?
I'll make mine very quick. Mine is Pocket 7, which is a client for the service known as Pocket, formerly known as Read It Later. I use this service extensively. It's my new version of Inbox Guilt, really. I was previously using another application, but I'm just trying this one out at the moment. This one has the benefit of it, you can actually set a periodic task in the background, so it will check your Pocket account every period that you set. And it will check if you've got new stories, and it will download them in the background of the phone so that they are ready for you as soon as you go in the application and you can read the articles that you didn't have time to read earlier on. The downside, I will say, is that it doesn't have live tile support. Whether or not you think that's important for such an application, it's up to you. And it's a little on the pricey side. It's £2.29, but it works, and it's dependable, and it works nice and smoothly. And I like it so far.
It's a little pricey. And I was expecting it to say about 50-20 quid. It's £2.29. It's that's less than a Starbucks medium triple shot caramel double espresso latte.
It's all relative.
Yeah, there we go. I was going to mention In the Know, which is a Google Analytics application with a live tile, but I have already done that in App of the Week. So that gets an honourable mention, as I keep an eye on some of my other blogs as certain music contests start to select their songs for next May. But I want to pick up Amazon Mobile. And specifically, I want to pick up the fact that it's now really easy for me to get to a wish list that I have on Amazon Mobile. Yes, I could go into the website. I've said before, one of the advantages of having a mobile app is doing things on the phone in the phone's UI, and it's much faster to do. And it's essentially whenever my kids are picking up things that they would like for Christmas. It used to be that I could remember, but I'm getting a little bit older. Now it's a simple case of, oh, hold on, Daddy's got a text coming in. Amazon Mobile, they would like to have another book about dolphins. Save to the Christmas wish list. So I'm just really enjoying the fact that it's nice, it's quick, and it syncs to my Amazon account, which means when I get back home, we power up the laptop, and when it gets to about November and I have to put in the big Amazon order, hopefully that wish list will be full of stuff, and I'll then just select the sensible things and ignore the requests for a SpongeBob SquarePants costume for Daddy to wear. Because I'm more of a Patrick than a SpongeBob, I would have to say. But there we go. That's enough of that. Thank you all very much for listening to the Insight Podcast. As always, we will have links back to the stories and the applications that we've mentioned here back on the website, which, David, can be found at
www.allaboutwindowsphone.com.
And we're on Twitter, HurdlePile, Facebook, and all the other social media networks. Rafe, URLs for two of them?
You can find us at AA_WP on Twitter and facebook.com/allaboutwindowsphone. And I do promise the listeners that I will eventually train David and Ewan to drop the www bit from the All About Windows Phone domain name. It does do it automatically for you. If you type it into your browser, you'll get redirected. But officially, it is just http allaboutwindowsphone.com.
I've asked Tim Berners-Lee, and he says it's important because if we're on a mobile device, we can put M at the front, and if we're on a phone, we can put an F at the front, so that the website knows what it's delivering the content to.
Well, it doesn't stop us using subdomains, and this, people will know this is the site on a mobile device. It will automatically refactor for that device. It's using responsive design. It does need a bit of optimization work. I promise to do some more work on that in the coming months. But yes, I made the decision just to have the domain, keep it a bit shorter.
So there we go. You can find us at wtf.allaboutwindowsphone.com. That one does work, Rafe, yes?
No, I don't think it does.
Well, you've got until this podcast is edited and up on the website to make it work. Tell you what, point that to our application. How about that then? Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to David Gilson for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Ewan, and thank you to everyone else who listened. And Rafe, you missed out the ://
I know. I'm sorry, David.
Rafe, who's now desperately going, I wish I'd never started this WWW conversation. That will teach you, but thank you anyway.
I should have known better when talking to you. But yes, thank you, everyone, for listening to the podcast. It's a pleasure, as always.
Indeed. Thank you all out there for listening. Your comments and feedback are welcome back on the website. We'll be back with another Insight podcast next week. Until then, stay safe. Enjoy the sunshine. September is nearly over, and that means October is around the corner, and October is going to be a huge, great, big month of change. You want to keep up to date with it? All the official news, all the breaking stories, you will find it with us, allaboutwindowsphone.com. Ta-ra for now.